Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 160 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's another Zach Schuster and Michael Bodigheimer episode. We're calling this the Media Pit. So you're in it, in the Media Pit, first time with that name. And this episode is brought to you once again by the Works Hydro Shot. The Works Hydro Shot, the ultimate tool that's practically made for cycling enthusiasts like you. It's a portable power cleaner that uses the Works 20-volt PowerShare batteries and pulls from any fresh water source. You've heard us talk about this on all of the wide-angle podium shows. It's a great tool for taking to races, for having at home, for anywhere that you know you need to clean your bike. And it's something that I think all of us need to do a better job of keeping up on. You know, there's no real excuse for putting away a dirty bike. You should always get it cleaned off, and this makes it that much easier having the Works Hydro Shot. What they're doing for us, Works is offering our listeners 15% off of all Hydro Shots and accessories. They've even put together a bike cleaning kit for you to check out, so you can get your Works Hydro Shot at yourcleanbike.com and enter the promo code CLEANBIKE to get 15% off any Hydro Shot item. That's yourcleanbike.com and enter the code CLEANBIKE clean bike at checkout. Links to that offer are in the show notes to this episode. Hope to see you on the trails at the cyclocross races using your Hydro Shot from Works. Also, just want to get you prepared. Coming up soon, we have the Wide Angle Podium Donor Drive for all of you who signed up in the past, became members, became part of our bigger Wide Angle Podium community and family. Thank you very much for doing that. That is a very small community. That is a fraction of our listenership. You know, I mentioned it before, but over 2 million downloads, thousands of listeners to every show, yet it's in the hundreds of people who actually support these shows. They're doing all the heavy lifting for the rest of you. We want to sort of share that burden and share that responsibility among everyone. So we're going to ask you in a week or so to start going to wideanglepodium.com and signing up. You'll get some really great swag for doing that if you are a new member. And we want you to really take ownership in what we're trying to do here. And hopefully for those couple hours a week that we are in your ears, it's worth, you know, $5 a month to you, or 10 or 15 or even up to 50 or whatever you want to give. So we're going to be doing that in a couple weeks at wideanglepodium.com, our network wide donor drive. Last, you know, we talk about it a little in this episode, but I would love for you all to go to youtube.com/CXairs, check out the Volay CX heat check power rankings. It's been a lot of fun putting these videos together, and I would love for you to check it out. And if you like it, please share those with your friends. All right, episode 160 of Cyclocross Radio. It's the Media Pit with Michael and Zach, and we're doing that right now. All right, we are here with another. Is this officially the Media Pit? Is that what we're calling this?
I kind of like it.
It works for me. Yeah.
Do we have to give Ryan Bodge credit for the name?
Is that what he called us? Is that where that came from?
It was he had a sign on the press room from Trek that said Media Pit.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. That works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the pit, but for media.
Yeah. All right. So we're the Media Pit.
I look forward to my pit pass. I heard you make some pretty good pit passes for DCCX, Bill. So I don't know if I can make it, although I do have family in D.C.
Oh, you definitely should make it. I just finalized the design for this year's. I have not revealed it yet, but I have finalized the DCCX pit pass. My original design, but I felt it was just too whiny. But the original design, it just said 2019 DCCX pit pass. Last year's design was better. That was.
I like that one. Yeah.
Oh, you guys saw them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So, but okay. So you saw you saw what it's going to be as well. It's very DC centric pit pass. So.
Okay. Well, for this one, I'll just really quick go grab my media pass from like Jingle Cross or Trek or something, and then we'll be good. It's the Media Pit, and we're good to go.
Awesome. All right, so we are going to talk today, start out with Fayette Cross, which was a C2 that really kind of looked like a C1 as far as fields went, in Arkansas, only show in North America for the weekend. And then we'll move on to some Euro stuff, and then maybe just hit some random points after that. I guess I was there. Should I start with Fayette Cross?
Yes,
yeah, should
do.
We ask the questions?
Yeah.
Let's ask the question. Let's be the curious noobs, Michael. And
yeah.
And Bill is our expert. So do you want to start, Michael?
Yeah.
What questions
do
you have for Bill?
Well, I mean, first of all, I want to know, like, this course seemed underwhelming. Tell us more. Was it better in person? Did video make it look smaller, shorter, flat?
I think that this is... You could say euphemistically it's a work in progress, but it's not really even a work in progress. So this is really build it because they are going to come, you know, type situation here with Fayette Cross. And I mean, we've seen more exciting tracks, and you know, if you go and look at the track walk that I posted on the CX Series YouTube channel, you'll see the comments, and they're all just like, how could this be a world's course? This is an embarrassment. This is going to be the worst worlds ever. And, you know, even in the title of the video, it said not the world's track. And that's the thing, is that everybody, and it became an issue on Sunday, everybody to get into this venue had to drive up this gravel service road. Like, that's the only entrance into the park, this like one lane gravel service road. And, you know, on Sunday, it was just like, I didn't even come up, you know, Brooke and a lot of his volunteers were down at the bottom of the road, you know, about a tenth of a mile away, saying basically, don't even go up there. Just find parking in a neighborhood down here and just walk up, because you're not getting out if you go in. And it was true. There were people getting towed out of their left and right because they had a ton of rain and it was all mud. But that's a long way of saying the infrastructure in this park is going to completely change in the next 2 years. What was the main entrance this year will truly be a service road by the time Worlds comes around in the back of the track. There's going to be a new paved entrance. A lot of where we were racing, a lot of what the criticism was of this just looks like a boring, you know, tape farm in a field, is going to be parking for Worlds. And I actually walked through the venue with Brooke Watts, who is the race organizer for this race, also for Worlds in 2022. And this will come out hopefully next week, but he points out all of the features that don't exist yet that are going to be created. For instance, where the pits were for this race, which was dead flat, is going to be a mound of earth with, like, I think he called it the Hooger, it's Hooger Hider, right, with the stairs to nowhere. 40 stairs.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's going to be built. That is something that is yet to be created. So these people who are like, hey, this is going to be horrible, it's like, they haven't even started yet on what's going to go there. There's another part, I think if you saw on Saturday, there was one muddy section of track because they went down this hill and then came back up and sort of at the lowest point. You know, they've had a ton of rain the week before. They had like 7 inches of rain. So Sunday was just like, it just needed like a drop of rain, and then everything was just boiling up from the below, and it was just a pond. But when you went to that lowest point, where you came back up was on this power line climb, you know, just your classic power line climb that you've done in your gravel and mountain bike rides all across the country. And they went up about a tenth of this climb. For the World Cup, they're going to go up half of it. I mean, so it's going to be big descent and then turn around. And, you know, depending on the weather conditions, it's going to be a huge, just sort of leg breaking climb, or even a run-up. So that's another feature that's going to be added. I think the last big thing was just that the start for this race, was going to be a parking lot, and the start's in a whole different place. So I think that, you know, we should sort of give them the benefit of the doubt for now, that they have some things, they have some resources and money behind it, and they are giving this park a complete overhaul between now and when the world shows up for Worlds.
So, can I interject really quick?
Yeah.
You said World Cup.
I'm sorry.
Is this a prelude to your interview with Brooke?
That
for
wasn't
next
a
year?
Slip.
It was not Brody a slip. I honestly will be completely honest. In our conversations, he did not mention going after a World Cup at all. And what I meant to say was World Championship. So thank you for clarifying that. This was all for World Championships. It'd be cool if they got a World Cup. I mean, I think that's all what we're hoping for. We're hoping, I think, in the best scenario is that everyone in the U.S. keeps their World Cup, then we get three, and that sort of gives us even more bargaining power. But I think, you know, as we kind of talked about last show with the new agreement, it seems like having three in one country that doesn't start with a B is not allowed. So
Bolivia, I was wondering if, you know, what was next for the course, you know, was it going to evolve into a C1 next year and then a World Cup? But sounds like you're unsure of that, and you didn't get any secrets.
No, I didn't get any secrets. If I had to guess, I think that, you know, what we have Chicago, we have Tacoma, Chicago, nothing announced after that for Nationals. You know, I can imagine if they have put all of this money into developing this track that can hold a World Championship event, I'd assume that Nationals is something that they would go after as well. The other part of this is that they truly are building a bike park. So I will say this, and he did mention this, but, you know, but he would have nothing to do with it. What they are creating is something that he envisions they could have a World Cup mountain bike race at. So, you know, those words did come up, but it just wasn't in the context of cyclocross.
Okay. Well, so I think there was that sense. My understanding of the event is that, you know, 2 years out, you're not going to be racing on the world's course. Talking to the riders and being there, what was the draw? I mean, it just seems like, you know, for a lot of, like you mentioned, the fields were pretty stacked.
I think it was a couple things. You know, we mentioned that you look at it and you go, oh, this is an opportunity for these riders to ride on the world's track. And I think that's where, you know, I mentioned mountain biking. That's where cyclocross and mountain biking are completely different animals. I mean, you look at cyclocross, you look at even in Belgium in the toughest courses, and the riders, you know, granted they're there year to year, but if they have a double weekend, they're in one city one day and another city another day, and it's not like they're there for 3 or 4 days looking at the track, dialing in turns. It's basically get out there, ride a lap or two in the morning, and go out and race. And you can contrast that to what we just saw for the Olympics in Tokyo with that test event with the mountain bikers, where this was a huge deal, and they were like, oh, if you didn't go to the test event, you are going to be behind when it comes to the actual Olympics next year, because they were able to see everything. They were able to sort of get in their heads what the line's on, and now they can sort of work through the year how they're going to race that event. And it's such a different animal where, you know, for World Cup mountain bikes, they want to be out there all week just running the course over and over and over, sessioning every feature. And that's not really that's not the deal in cyclocross. So why did people come to this event? I think that people came to this event because it's really this first block. It is the end of this first block of racing. I think that everybody out there was like, all right, this is it. Then, you know, I mean, some are going to Charm City, some are going to US Open, some are going to the USA Cycling cyclocross camp, but I think that this is the first week that it starts to sort of diminish or sort of dissipate as far as where everybody's going and what everybody's doing. And I think Brooke did a great job of convincing people to come out there and really extend one more week to race that. So yeah, the benefit of that was like there was no competition, Gloucester wasn't happening, and a lot of people came out to see what was going on in Fayetteville.
I have a slight aside, and just because you brought it up, is Nationals going to be in back in January. Is this the rumor I'm hearing?
I believe that what I've heard, and Zach, you know, maybe you have some more information on this. My understanding is this might be the last year for December, and then the UCI is going to force everybody back to January, but I am not 100% clear on that. But that definitely seems to be the talk that's going around.
I've not heard anything about that. I mean, Chicago is December next year. So, I mean, I thought, I don't know. It seemed like that was, I've not heard anything about that.
I guess I'm just basing off like Twitter talk and like rumors and just kind of mentions of that. So
where was that? How did I miss this? I guess I completely missed
this. They definitely put it in the latest rules that it's like you have to have, you know, you have to show some sort of, you know, force majeure for you to be able to move off of the designated day for Worlds. And it seemed to be pointed at the U.S., you know, and it's in the same way that we're all under the understanding that, look, UCI is clamping down on C1 requirements, so you better get your ducks in a row. But the U.S., we're going to get this derogation and make sure that at least it doesn't happen this year so everybody can get straight. And then maybe next year that'll start, you know, being enforced. Oh, and that didn't happen at all. It got enforced this year and we lost all of these C1s, you know. So what's said and what is actually then enforced are two different things. You know, I think the same thing is going to happen with the reorganization of the World Cups and selling the management of the World Cups to the Flanders Group. I think that it's going to be, you know, even though it's like, oh yes, we love the U.S., we want to keep coming back. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. So it's a lot of, you know, well, we've always been able to sort of skirt the rules, so we'll be able to do it again. U.S. is an exception. May not be the case anymore. But again, you're right, Zach. There's nothing out there that's concrete. No one said this is happening.
Oh, interesting. Well, I guess maybe we'll see. Fayetteville could be in January, and then like 2 weeks later, they could have Worlds. Who knows? That could happen. So should we jump into the racing?
Yeah.
We had these like totally lit fields, and there were 2 days with four different winners. We had four different winners over the 2 days. It's just pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't even put that together. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there was such diversity in our winners. So I guess we can start with the women for day one. I guess the old boss is same as the new boss. Isn't that your music? Doesn't
yeah,
that
the
like
who?
Your era, Bill?
Yeah. Very good. We won't get fooled again.
Yeah.
Or will we?
I don't know. That's a good question. So
she's got a squeeze box, you know.
I mean, so to not bury the lead, Magalie Rochette took the win. I believe Caroline Mani was second, our friend Frenchie, and Claire Hansinger was third. But these seemed like conditions. Can you describe the conditions? It seems like it was hot. It was a little bit faster. And this is kind of the race kind of conditions we've seen our Canadian friend, third favorite Canadian, I guess. I don't know. Michael Van Niem second.
All I know is second.
Okay. All right. So we don't know. But it seems like those are kind of the conditions that Rochette has excelled in this year and that she's turned in a number of really like phenomenal performances so far this year.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. After her scare, what was it, 3 years ago now at Rochester with the heat stroke and having to be taken to the hospital and just a really scary moment. Since that time, it's almost like she's come back. And she even said that she can't, like, race as hard in those conditions. Obviously, this was nothing like that was. I mean, that was close. That was high 90s and just, you know, super humid and just horrible conditions. This day, like Saturday, when we woke up on Saturday, I was like, this is the weather I want for the rest of my life. You know, it was like 70 degrees and sunny and just beautiful. And unfortunately, you know, the heat just kept going up. But again, it wasn't horrible. It was probably in the 80s. I think it did definitely affect some people. And I kind of made this point because we're going to talk about this muddy race that we had on Sunday, that everybody's saying, well, the Sunday race was so much harder. when you're watching it, but I think when you were racing it, I didn't really get that feeling from the racers. I think that, you know, when they're in there, like, you know, obviously it's a bigger watts day and they're just dealing with the conditions and dealing with the wet. But as far as like staying cool and not overheating, they were all in a perfect zone, as opposed to Saturday where, you know, Michael, you talked about the track. It was just fast. There was nothing there that was really technical at all to slow anybody down. And even the finishing stretch was kind of this slightly off camber, bumpy, a little bit uphill, grassy stretch that, you know, I was talking to Brandon Fix and some other guys, like, yeah, I mean, you still had to push up that. There was nowhere that you were just like getting your foot off the gas and taking a break and having like a big long descent or anything. So it was just go the whole time. And yeah, Rochette, is you're absolutely right, Zach. Those are just the conditions that she's been able to get out fast. There's no tactics here other than I am going to break your legs at the start and just continue to extend the lead. And that's basically what she did. It truly was just wire to wire for her. Most boring GoPro I've ever seen.
That's funny.
It's one of those tracks that also look like, you know, they just cut it, and I think you said it was bumpy, but I can just imagine that it's like super spongy and really just, you know, you're putting the power down and you're getting nothing back in return. So I can imagine that makes it, you know, as hard as you say.
Yeah, you know, it's the type of thing, you know, we see a lot for you guys out in Madison, you definitely down in New Orleans with you and your series down there, and what we have in DC is that it's locals working local races. So, you know, for DCCX, we've already cut, you know, we're in charge. Like, they just let it go to seed and we come in there and have to do all the landscaping for the track, and we're already on, you know, we're already like thousands of dollars in for having people out there knocking down the grass 2, 3, 4 times. This is not a, you know, a local group that's in there. So they basically came in Wednesday and knocked down the grass, and it had rained in that field 7 inches. So tons of cut grass all over the place, long
Yikes.
Cut grass.
Yep.
And just, you know, there wasn't an opportunity for weekly practices or even big fields during the day really to smooth it out. And yeah, you're right. It was bumpy, and it was just a dry slog as opposed to Sunday's wet slog.
Yeah, that's what one thing Claire Hansinger said in her interview. She talked about how rocky it was too. It sounds like it was kind of cut in a field. And so, as you kind of alluded to, it seems like there's a lot of work that's left to be done there.
Yeah, Scott Herman, in true Scott Herman, I'm announcing this race, I'm going to research it until it, you know, completely gives up. He had researched the different types of soil for this area in Arkansas. Okay. And I believe there was like 3 different types of soil. And he was going through how, you know, it was sort of the sandy silt top, and that's about 3 inches. And then you sort of hit this rockier section after that. And it was just, he was just giving everyone the rundown of what racers were experiencing on both days when it came to what they were riding through for the dirt.
So I kind of want to handle both women's races at once.
Sure.
I think like you can't. I think there's just such a contrast between.
Yeah, should we go through a little bit more of this race just in a couple?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just a couple notes.
I had a question.
Okay, yeah.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah, no, just I was curious, Bill, you're there. Katarina Nash in 8th place. I mean, after her past performances, I'm just, did something happen?
I talking to her, what happened was Grinduro. You know, that was a huge effort. And just the week before, completely different style of racing. They were out there 6 hours. It was snowing for most of it, you know. So she just didn't. She said her legs just weren't there, you know, just wasn't there. And it's also, you know, just this accumulation of the weeks of racing plus doing this completely different sport, you know, right in the middle of this cyclocross block that I think kind of had her with some dead legs there for Saturday. I did want to mention Crystal Anthony having a great race in 4th. You know, she's one of the people who's out there. Well, one, she lives out there now, but also, you know, this was kind of a double weekend for a lot of racers like Crystal Anthony, like Jen Jackson. You know, he has Stephen DeVoust out there. He had other folks who were doing the cyclocross race and then hanging out for the Oz Trails Epic Rides race, which is happening this weekend. So the mountain bikers sort of were able to have a little cyclocross fun before they went into a weekend of the finale for the Epic Rides. But yeah, Crystal out there, great race in fourth place. Really good to see her out there. Raylan Nuss, really nice performance in a really stacked field in fifth place. Ruby West in sixth place. Sunny Gilbert, good effort by Sunny Gilbert. Still talk to her a little bit. You know, she had that crash at Roanoke and is still feeling the effects of that. You know, to this day, she still is not to 100%, still not able to sort of get out of the saddle and put out the power that she relies on. So good effort from her. And then, yeah, as you said, Katarina Nash in eight. Jen Jackson, you know, didn't feel like she had the legs either in ninth place. And then good effort by Emily Werner in 10th place.
I just want to give a quick shout out to my friend Leslie Etheridge in 19th place. Way to go, Leslie. Top 20 in the C2.
And crushed the race predictor like she said she was going to.
That's right.
One thing to me, what's developing, right, is I think we could argue that so far the women's series, the women's domestic scene, and the CXC Check power rankings bear this out, has really been about Megali Rochette and Claire Hansinger. And I think the two of them have shown that they excel in different conditions, and that's literally what happened here this weekend. Do you guys agree? I mean, I think that you know, when it's muddy, Clara does well, like super well. She's had two great rides, and Megali, that, like, if there's any chink in the armor, that's where it's been, is when it's muddy.
Yeah, definitely. And here's something, and I want you guys to sort of weigh in on this to see if I'm just basing this on this weekend or if this is kind of something that I feel like it's something we've seen, because I've seen it at Rochester as well. Hansinger, you know, we talked about Magli Rochette just kind of starting off and just ripping legs off from the start. Hansinger really almost has this Sven Ness sort of approach to racing where she kind of hangs out for the first, you know, lap or so, and isn't really going to go out to the front and isn't going to make like any big moves. And then eventually just sort of slowly works her way up there. And then all of a sudden she's out front with no one, especially in this mud race. But it's just like super methodical the way she races. It doesn't look like, To my what I see, it doesn't look like she's ever putting in any attacks. She's just, you know, slowly rolling people off of her wheels.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I didn't see this race, but just based on the races I have seen her, you know, she's kind of this very, very steady Eddie. And you look at her temperament, and even if you base that sort of on social media and the things that she posts, like, you know, she's quiet. She also seems like a student of the game, you know, and I think that's kind of the way she's doing it. And I'm really enjoying watching her race this season, and I'm excited to see like how the rest of the season pans out for her.
All right, yeah. So I think to echo kind of what you guys were saying, I think that's definitely true about Claire, and she does seem to have more of that power, you know, diesel grind it out style of riding. And I know I was giving her a bit of a hard time at she came to our practice because I think she was talking about here in Madison, the one you were at, Michael, where she was talking on day three of Jingle Cross, maybe she didn't get off to like the best start, you know, and she kind of found herself going backwards a bit. And so I was giving her a bit of a hard time, and I was like, oh, maybe you should have like no, it was that track. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe you should have been doing those starts at our practice instead of just hanging out and chilling and watching all of us. So, yeah, I think that, you know, I look at her like super impressive what she's been able to do. And, you know, obviously being a young rider, I think developing those different skills and working on things that you're not as strong at. So it's almost like, holy, like what could come, you know, as you kind of adapt your racing. But right now, very, very well suited for grinding it out in thick conditions.
Yeah, but I think that it also hurts her a little bit with these races, and especially racing against Magli, who's such a great starter, in that she sort of puts herself in a hole from the start. You know, it's look, if we look at Rochester, where you know, she was kind of in that little pack, and then no one really had the strength to chase down Magley, and she finally was like, well, I guess I can go do this, and you know, got a solo second, and then it was kind of the same thing that we saw on Saturday at Fayetteville, that you know, I think that you're absolutely right, Zach. Maybe if she sort of adds that to her arsenal, sort of that start power and being able to be right up on that wheel from the beginning, it's going to be really tough to beat her in future races.
Jesse Anthony posted a photo of her on the podium, and it was like hashtag MudFund. And since I wasn't there, I didn't see this. She was wearing the national team kit. And we kind of touched on this last week, Bill, with her position in the World Cup. I guess that means that she's going to go to Worlds. That's qualified her for Worlds. But why is she in a USA national team kit at Fayetteville, not the team S&M kit?
I think it comes down to support. So she's now a national team member, and with that comes a higher level of support. So I don't think, and I think, Zach, you've probably talked to Beth Ann and some of those folks more. I just don't think they have the resources to maybe support her. So if somebody else comes in like USA Cycling and is able to do it, you know, the trade-off is then you're wearing the national team kit if that's who's supporting you for the race. So that's definitely what was happening there. That's why you saw the Mud Fund hashtag and that other thing, which is great. If this is a way that we're able to get top racers to these events, then we're all for it. And you know, the national team, they were also, even though he raced in his Jam Fund kit, they were supporting Spencer because he was kind of privateer there. Even Curtis White was warming up in that tent because he was there solo as well. So it was really good to see that USA Cycling was there, that there was that national that federation presence that was able to offer support to the top riders out there that who didn't otherwise have it.
Yeah, I mean, Clara said that she was actually not planning on doing Fayetteville, but it kind of dovetails with there's some sort of camp going on.
Yeah, there's
like
USA
Jesse
Cycling
mentioned it,
and camp that's happening like right now.
Yeah, they've been like really just mum on, I guess, all this stuff that's going on. I mean, they didn't tell us anything about it, and so it was all kind of very mysterious. But I think that was part of it, is she was there. They had the support, and so she wasn't going to do the race, and decided to do it, and came away with her first win of the year. So not a bad deal for her. But I just kind of wonder to what extent, you know, because it worked so well with a thing they were already doing in Fayetteville, to what extent we'll see that level of support at more races.
I think you're right that there was definitely some convenience there with that camp happening in that area. And also I just think having all of those events right there, you had this world this Epic Rides race that's happening, the Oz Trails just in Bentonville, which is just a couple miles away, and then you had this race, and then you have this secret team camp happening that's possibly keeping riders from going to 2C2s that are on this weekend, that I don't know, seems okay.
Interesting. I guess we'll need to check the start list, and we can get to that later. I had assumed that maybe this was a new feature with USAC this year, that we would be seeing more riders at national races, not overseas, in the, you know, the national team kit. But it sounds like you guys are saying this is maybe kind of a it only worked out in this one instance.
I think that's still to be seen. I think that Jesse definitely would like to do that more, but I don't want to put words into his mouth. But I do think that supporting riders in the U.S. and kind of growing up riders in the U.S. without, that was one thing that he told me, without having to just shove them off to Europe right away, is definitely part of the development plan. But I can't, I mean, more than that, I really don't know.
And we can sort of use that as a point to say, hey, that's what your USAC license supports.
Yeah, for sure.
Part of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of cool.
You know, it's also, but aside from that, it's not, and I think that this is the point that they would like to emphasize, is that it's not necessarily your license fees that are going to support somebody else racing. It's the fundraising that's taking place behind the scenes by primarily Tim Johnson and building up that Mud Fund, which is really an exclusively cyclocross focused pot of money.
Okay.
And having that available to support riders and do other things that is outside of the normal annual dues for riders that we're hoping go to continue to grow the sport and grow the federation so that it continues to do viable things. So I think that's actually two different things going on there.
Well, I guess the other part is, you know, you have Clara, and then I asked Meg Lee about this in terms of, you know, the mud. It seems like, you know, she's obviously done well in bad conditions. She finished fifth at Worlds a few years ago in that ridiculous race in Luxembourg. You know, last year, I think she finished sixth, I want to say, at the Bern World Cup, which was like a dry hammer fest grass crit. Or dirt crit, whatever it was, you know, through an empty pool, whatever that race was, you know, but like she'd be the first to admit that she struggled in Europe last year. And, you know, I kind of wonder if, you know, it overcoming that barrier and developing those skills is going to be a really important thing for her to achieve. You know, the goals that she's been very clear are her goals is success in Europe. I don't know. I just that was kind of the other thing that kind of popped into mind, just seeing the results from this weekend.
Yeah, I think that she, I think the skills are there. I think it's definitely not, yeah, as you say, you know, she's sort of up and down in those conditions. And I think that she, more than anything, kind of had an off day, you know, and for someone who has had such a stellar season and been winning races and been up there and sort of dominating, it's going to happen. Again, I don't want to put words into their mouths either, but I'm sure that they would be the first one to say that it's still, you know, Magalie's development is still a work in progress. And as good as she is, that I think that there are skills that she would like to improve and continue to improve. So, you know, she's pretty humble about these things. You know, she's I think that going back to Europe and racing in those conditions, she'll be right up there, but definitely was interesting to see her having an off day, but just and really it was the contrast was just how the field sort of shook out. Was she was racing by herself in seventh place, and we've seen her racing by herself a lot. It was just interesting to see this completely different, you know, set of circumstances for that Sunday race.
Well, and that's kind of why I bring it up, is I think anytime you interview her, she has a very good sense of where she's at. And I think she's one of those athletes who's not going to try to bullshit you about where she's at. And so I think it was interesting. And I, you know, I asked about it in kind of a tangential way, and she was just very kind of open about, you know, talking about it. So I thought that was really cool. Because I definitely didn't like it was very like one of those tangential interview questions, you know.
It was the kind of thing like we saw that mud in Madison, where I think it was true, like you're going to lose a shoe in the mud type mud, where this was more water, you know, it was just a deluge of rain. And it wasn't necessarily like, you know, there were definitely parts where you were sinking in the mud. There were definitely parts that there were forced runs. But other than that, you know, and they were switching bikes a lot, but the bikes weren't coming in, you know, nobody was ripping off a derailleur.
It wasn't sticking to the bike. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. So,
you know, let me tell you, racing cross in New Orleans, I know those conditions very intimately and have cleaned my bike in a puddle next to the course.
That was
after
happening.
The race
that was happening
done.
There for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
To the chagrin of my friends who are yelling about my bottom bracket.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just to finish the podium on day two is Clara in first, Caroline Mani in second, and Katarina Nash in third. Looks like she bounced back a bit.
Yeah, you know, I think she's also one of these racers that has such a complete control of the bike and conditions that she's able to use that to her advantage. So even if still she wasn't 100%, you know, fitness wise, she is such a technically amazing racer that when the conditions got bad, she's like, okay, this is something that's going to work for me. And I think we saw that with Nash grabbing third on that second day.
And Sonny Gilbert, fourth place, moving up from from Saturday. So good to see that. And then we had that nice string of Canadian flags there. Jen Jackson, fifth, Ruby West, sixth, and Magali in seventh. So
yeah, the fourth line, getting the work done. and just to go back to Gilbert, you know, and Zach, I know you've talked to her about this in the past. You know, it's you know, we can look back to nationals as well. There were definitely a lot of sections in there where it's off the bike and running, and then other sections where it's just, you know, big ring, low cadence, pedaling it out. And I think for Sonny, those are two conditions, even with her still recovering from injury, that she's going to excel in, and she certainly did. So it was really good to see her at the top of a race again.
Can you on the topic of Sonny, can you remember a rider who, based on conditions, becomes an instant race favorite more than her? Like, I mean, right? Like, you're like, if it's muddy and thick, like Sonny Gilbert goes from like, oh, you know, top five to like, she can legit win this race.
I mean, even recently, where she's, you know, been so frustrated with how she's not been able to race at where I think she thought she was coming into the season. And this is, you know, taking into consideration that, you know, she hasn't really made a secret of it. You know, like, she's looking at the end of the season. Like, she didn't need to come into the season, you know, winning races from the drop of the hat. This is a slow build for her, and I mean, I don't want to out her. I think she's been public about this, but she's looking at nationals. You know, that's kind of her goal, and exactly what you're saying. You know, that she is a race favorite when conditions get crappy, and look where we're racing nationals, in a place that there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have crappy conditions in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unreal. Like, someone from some publication in the Pacific Northwest asked me for like a quote about favorites, and I was just like, you know, given favorites, and I'm like, if it's going to be muddy, like, you can't leave Sonny Gilbert out. Like, if there's a lot of running, like, she could legitimately, you know, be our national champion. I think it's just incredible how the specific conditions, she just has this skill set that's so...
We're doing it. We're doing it, Zach. We're doing it right now, just on the women's side. You ready? You want to go first?
What are we doing?
Who's winning nationals? Women's.
Clara.
Oh, man. I mean, I think, like, if right now, it's Clara Hansinger. Not to... I mean, right?
I think I'm going three for three.
I mean, she's got the juice right now, you know, like...
Yep.
She's building. It's hometown. I mean, not hometown. It's across the river in Tacoma. She's young. She's learning a ton. Like, I can see it lining up for her.
Yeah. All right. No pressure. She doesn't even feel pressure. She doesn't care what we say.
She doesn't. She tries to shrug it off.
I even tried doing that to her last year, because, like, when Emma White announced that she wasn't coming back, I did an interview with her. I'm like, so you're the favorite. And she's like, am I the favorite? I don't know. She's like getting kind of philosophical about it. I'm like, you're so sly. But no, I mean, she's a gamer, and I can just tell you that, like, she really, 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 really wanted to win that U23 national championship last year, and she delivered a very impressive performance. And so, although what do you call her, the quiet assassin, like, you know,
smiling assassin,
like, there's a competitive fire in there, and I think we've seen that in this first month. So there's
For sure.
So just to circle back before we go to the men, and that'll be interesting to predict our men's winners. Yep. You know, Magali just talked about, which she does a lot of, being impatient and kind of, instead of grinding it out, trying to maybe get a little cute with it, you know, and try to be like, oh, should I run? Should I not run? Instead of just committing to the slog, as it were. So I guess that's kind of where she's at. And she, you know, kind of talked about it being a learning experience and trying to get the right mentality going into those kind of races, which is kind of what, you know, I think Clara talked about too, was just having, it's a different mentality sometimes that you have to take into it versus, like, being tactical. Sometimes it's just like, look, this is going to be a slog and I need to be up and forward. So, it's interesting just to me to see how you have two totally different races on two different days and how it plays out.
Yeah, it was another, it's gotta play with your mind. I have to imagine, because this was another, we had the exact same circumstance that we had at Trek for the World Cup for this Sunday women's race, just with this, you know, how the course set up and just the conditions. It was a 3-lap race for the women again, you know, which it's just got to be. That's, I don't know, maybe it's not, but I feel like, you know, when you go into a cyclocross race, you're sort of expecting to get 5, 6, 7 laps in there, and just seeing coming across your first lap of the race and seeing, wow, 2 to go has to be a little weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't ask anybody about it. That was just from the outside looking in.
And then finally, I guess I have one more point that I want to make, and I guess this is the point I keep making, but I feel like at some point, Mani's going to win a race, and we're just going to be like, this is the year of Caroline Mani. I still think that she is the story of this season with what she's dealt with. 2 more seconds, like, she's just there. She's just there at the front, and I don't know. I continue to be impressed.
You know, and that's one of the things where it makes it easy for us to pick Hansinger. The other reason for nationals is that everybody who's beating for isn't an American citizen.
Yeah. I mean, there's one that'll be your competition at Pan Ams, but then the other two, like, that we're looking at are not eligible to race at Pan Ams. So, in Katka and Frenchie, so.
That's right. That's right. You know, there are some other racers out there who are still, I think, may have some late season comebacks, but yeah,
definitely the
leader in the clubhouse.
Yes,
I agree. Yeah, not trying to show shade at anybody, but Clara's my long shot pick. A long shot, for as sure. In early, not she's a long shot.
No, I didn't mean to make it so we need to hedge any bets. I'm just saying that we all realize before people yell at us that there are people who still are going to be competitive at the end of the year, but I'm sticking by that pick.
Yeah.
All right.
One that's probably a little bit tougher to make will be on the men's side.
Oh yeah, I wasn't even going to bring that up.
Oh, well, we're on the hook for it, but we had 2 races there as well, and I think that we've seen there's a group that has emerged as kind of the top dogs on the men's side, which, you know, one could argue that in recent years Stephen Hyde has been the sole man to beat, and I don't know, he still is the, you know, you got to take that jersey from him, but like there's 4 or 5 dudes, and those 4 dudes on day 1 were the top 4. I think that
you're right. I think it's a group of 5 until somebody else comes up, and some may come and join that. But I think if we're talking about the same ones right now, the 5 top riders in the U.S., even though he wasn't there, is Hyde, but definitely Curtis White, Kerry Werner, Gage Hecht, and Lance Heydt. Those are the ones who all seem to have a shot at any race that they're in.
Yeah, and they were all within 30 seconds of each other on day 1. So, you were there, Bill. It seemed like Curtis had a late flat. There were kind of 2 guys at the front. Was it another Curtis v. Kenny battle? Is that kind of how it went down?
I think it really was. I think those guys are marking each other. Even talking to Gage Hecht before Saturday, I was like, you know, I think he, because of course he wants, I was like, I got a pretty good shot for this one. He's like, I don't know, Curtis is like putting out these watts recently. he's a tough one to keep up with. So that seems to be the line on Curtis White right now, is that he is just like just flying out there. I'm honestly just super impressed with how Kerry has come into this season and has just, you know, Kerry Werner is one of these guys who, despite all of the success that he has, I mean, he won the Pro CX, if that's even a thing, last year. You know, he's winning races, he's always on the podium, he's always up there, yet I don't think he's ever looked at as a favorite. Is that fair to say?
I feel like he has a chip on his shoulder a bit. Yeah. Yeah. I would say that. He races that way too.
Yeah. So it's good to see it. And he's a proven racer. It was kind of interesting, just for some history, working for the Cliff Pro team this season on the mountain bike side. And one of the guys who races on the team is Russell Finsterwald. And, you know, Finsterwald and Keegan Swenson and Kerry Werner all grew up together, at least grew up in racing mountain bikes together and racing on the national level as juniors in U23s. And Kerry Warner won a national championship. He was a U23 national champion mountain biker, beating those guys who are some of the fastest racers that we have in the country. So it's not like he's coming into this out of nowhere or is some sort of slouch. And I think that he's proven that, you know, if we're talking about favorites, he's definitely one that needs to be up there. And yeah, Curtis flatted, but you know, Werner was right there to be able to take advantage. So it was a really good, strong, solid win for him.
The thing about, I guess, when I look at Kerry, the thing I have not figured out is, and I think this goes to your point, is like, when you look at a course and be like, this is a Kerry Werner course, like I just haven't, yeah. I haven't figured that out, because like, you know, I look at Hyde as being a very technical rider as well. Kerry obviously is, but I just haven't figured out like what his particular skill set is, but whatever he is doing, it's working, yeah. You know, and he's hanging with Curtis. You talked about the watts that Curtis is putting out, and Kerry is able to mark him on some very fast courses. And so it's like, I don't know, maybe we just underestimate him, you know, kind of at every turn. And you know, we quietly forget that he finished third at two straight nationals in two different yep. kinds of conditions. And we're like, oh, we forgot about that. You know, it's just really weird. You know, and like you said, Michael, I think, you know, he absolutely has a chip on his shoulder, or, you know, something to prove, especially with kind of how Louisville went, and, you know, wanting to prove that he deserves to be mentioned. In I feel that like conversation.
I feel like he's had that chip on his shoulder for a few years now, and that's sort of always kind of coming in. I mean, I remember listening to some of your old podcasts, Bill, with him, and just like I'm going to win nationals next year, and everybody's like, yeah, okay, all right, Kerry, you know, you got Jay Powell, you know, we got Hyde coming up, and I do feel like this year has. I mean, he just seems that much more stronger, and I'm just going to say it. That it's the vlog. It's the vlog bump. The vlog has become yeah. really good. He's a good little filmmaker. Not to be patronizing. He's a good filmmaker. He's making entertaining stuff. And maybe there's something to be said about something that kind of keeps your mind relaxed. It kind of takes you off the stress of the race. And he's being creative and get some of those juices out. And yeah, I've enjoyed his stuff this season, and I was stoked to see him win day one at Fayetcross.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the vlog as well. I think it's always been good, but this year, whatever it is, he seems happy, seems stoked to be racing. You're right, his editing has gotten that much better, and it's fun to watch.
He's got that 360 cam too. It's perfect yeah. for the laps. It's just a great yeah. use of that camera.
So that's day one. I mean, I guess the other thing.
Oh yeah, no, I just wanted to point out a couple other racers who were in here worth mentioning. First off, Spencer Petrov, you know, sort of revealing what I think we all already knew, but nobody wanted to say it until he came out and raced in it, racing for the Jam Fund, back to that team. And it was great that they're able to support him. But Petrov came out, first time that we saw him this year, was looking good. I mean, he's looking good. He was, I think, in kind of normal Spencer way, was frustrated with the way that his race went and feels like he should have been better. But I think a strong sixth place for him. Cody Kupp, you know, former collegiate national champ, who Fort Lewis, I can't remember how many years ago, but getting back into racing, so it was sort of kind of cool to see him in there at seventh place. Drew Dillman in eighth. And the guy I was forgetting about, who I wanted to mention for sure, is Grant Elwood. You know, I mean, we've always seen Grant around there, but really, really strong weekend for him, starting off with this fifth place on Saturday. And then, you know, the guy that everybody was looking at, starting from the back row, I think on that, you know, I have that heat check, my counting is probably off, but it was somewhere between 23 and 25 people who he started, maybe not necessarily passed if he started on the same yeah. row as them, but eventually
I
was
like
ahead
how
of 20.
Brooke Watts trolled you on that one.
Oh no, it was the Cyclocross 24 guys.
Oh is
yeah.
it okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you start in the same road, is it considered passing?
I was like, yes. Yes,
yes, it does.
Regardless, Logan Owen showing up and still The interesting thing, you know, we talked about the track and how it had all of these twists and turns in it. That really hurt Logan, you know, and he even said as much. He's like, my cornering is not where it used to be, and these guys have gotten good. I think was the quote that he gave me, and you could see it every time he came down that finishing stretch. Like, there'd be a gap and it would just close up. Like the watts, you know, I mean, he is such a diesel. The watts would kick in, and all of a sudden he'd be right back into that front group, and he just couldn't continue closing those gaps as the race went on. The other interesting thing that I just want to throw out here about Logan that I noticed, and this is sort of, you know, right in the heart of cyclocross nerddom, when he stopped racing cyclocross, being able to ride, not even hop, but ride planks was still a novelty. It was something that a couple guys were doing it, and it was even like they'd, you know, bounce off that front one and literally ride over them. And now we're at the point where no one's slowing down, no one's even touching them. He doesn't have that skill. Like, he got out before that was a skill that was mandatory to race at the top level. So every time it came to the planks, you know, it wasn't as much a problem on Sunday when it was nasty, but Saturday when it was super fast, he said he lost like 3 seconds every time through the planks. So that was another area where he had to wait for those long stretches to make that up. So, you know, you're talking 8-9 laps, that's 30 seconds there just on planks alone that he's giving up, because that is a skill that developed while he was out of the game, which I thought was really interesting. It was just this evolutionary change that took place after he left.
Yeah, I saw, I think you did you had a photo or something that you might have posted at the barriers, and I noticed that, so I'm glad you brought that up, because I think Kerry was in front of him or something hopping, or yeah, it might have been during the heat check video, and it was like, oh yeah, he doesn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Or he never did.
I mean, been so long. I mean, did he even know how to use disc brakes? Yeah. You know, I want to point out that, and maybe, you know, maybe one of the listeners of this podcast can do the research for us, but Logan Owen just finished his first Grand Tour, which was La Vuelta. And then what, a month later, lines up and races cross. I mean, who was the last rider to do that? You know,
I'd have to think that Stibar, maybe. Did he do any Grand Tours, or is he just a one day guy?
He's done Grand Tours.
I think he's done the tour before, hasn't he? Been on support for,
yeah,
for
I
stuff?
Feel like mostly, I mean, I guess there's probably a few Euros who have done it, you know, maybe Francis Morey would be
sure,
a good,
yeah,
guess. But I'm kind of like really thinking about like Americans, you know. I'm sure, you know, Tim Johnson rode the Tour of Georgia and then, you know, raced in, you know, cross. But like the Grand Tour into a cyclocross race, pretty cool. I don't know, just thought that was a little bit of interesting.
The only
and,
other person, but I don't think he had done a Grand Tour, would have been Joe Dombrowski. But
Did he? He's raced cross after being on a World Tour team.
Yeah, he'll show up to our local races and just kind of play around. But definitely racing.
Maybe it was like Ted King. Maybe Ted King did the Grand Tour, did the Vuelta, and then did a cross race. Anyway, hopefully someone will send you an email, Bill, and we'll find out who that was.
Look forward to it. feedback@cxers.com. Should we move on over to Sunday?
Yeah, so I think with day two, I think that these two guys would be the first to admit that if there is a discrepancy between Curtis and Kenny, the nemesis, it's definitely mud. You know, I think we saw last year at Supercross Cup, especially on that ridiculously awful, horrible conditions they had. Like Curtis kind of kicked the shit out of Kerry there. And, you know, it happened again at Louisville Nationals. Kerry got bogged in the proverbial mud. So it was interesting to see, you know, Kerry has talked about improving and the mental approach that it takes that. But again, we had Curtis leading the way, and it looks like time gaps were a little bit bigger. So it seems like it was a little less of because Gage was 25 seconds back, and then Kerry was 2 minutes behind.
Yeah,
behind
and
Curtis.
You look at, you know, let's just go back to Louisville, you know, and the one guy that could stay with Hyde and White, you know, stay with him. I think even probably the same gap behind, right? Is Gage Hecht.
Yep.
You know, I mean, he's the other guy who's just able to to excel and kind of stay with them. And you know, that's an interesting one. You know, it's like, it's not like Curtis White is old. He's 24. Heck is 21, but you know, Heck just kind of, he didn't have to race elites last year at Nationals, but he chose to, and then coming in this year. So I think that's a big race for him. That's a really big race. And then, you know, we talked about the disadvantages that Logan Owen had when it was a fast open race. Those kind of went away on Sunday, and then we see him kind of, I mean, literally like pig and shit. That is, I think, where Logan Owen, when it comes to cyclocross, is happiest. And it was fun to watch him race. It was fun because it was like all of the old kind of muscle memory sort of kicked in on Sunday, and we saw him taking guys out in corners. We saw him, you know, leaning in hard to people coming around, and just this sort of like hard-nosed cyclocross racing that, again, we talk about I talked about how the evolution of cyclocross has changed in the U.S. and how everybody is, you know, you have to have that mandatory skill of riding the barriers. In that exact same way, I think that the culture of that elite race has changed a little bit in the last couple of years as well. I've talked about it in the past where it's gotten kind of nice. And Logan Owen wasn't from that generation when he was racing. And it was awesome to see. He was like, if we're going to race, we're going to race. We're here to win this, you know? And he was not letting anybody by him. He was not letting anybody through the turns and the corners. And, you know, it was cool. It was kind of fun to see guys just get after it, you know, all fair play, all just hard racing. But it definitely was a different style of racing than I think that the three of us have become accustomed to seeing week to week in the last couple of years.
I look forward to his cross campaign this year, which,
yeah, I think
might just,
I mean,
be,
I don't
this
know,
in Nationals.
I think it was just going to be this, and this he was probably like, Sunday's good, it was muddy, now I can just go, you know, wait until sort of chill out and wait until Tacoma.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
and
I'm sure. I mean,
somewhat importantly, he earned UCI points. I mean, yes. There was the non-zero possibility that he would have finished outside the top 10 and actually not qualified.
Yeah, so he got a point Saturday, and then whatever the points are for fourth place
for
on
fourth
Sunday.
Place, yeah.
So you're right. So not only, you're absolutely right, Zach. Yeah, I didn't even think about that part. So he qualified for Nationals, so, you know, mission accomplished there. And then
that's a funny thing to say. Logan Owen, 10-time national champion,
yeah,
just qualifies for Nationals.
Oh no, I was kind of half joking him before, you know, he lined up on Saturday, and he's just, you know, behind the grid, and they're calling names, and he's just sitting there, and I'm like, when's the last time he did this?
I asked him that. It was Louisville 2013 at the Derby City Cup, his first race as a U23.
Because
as a 19-year-old, right, you don't have any UCI points. Because he was like, he knew the exact race. And then he was like, there was a long start. I was in fifth place by the end of the whole shot. And I was like, and you are so talented.
Yeah.
But I think more importantly, it sounds like he enjoyed racing cross. So it seems like it's leaving him with that good taste in his mouth that'll make him want to do Tacoma. Did you get that takeaway from him?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Looking at the results, another, I guess, to me, a result that stands out from that one is our second favorite Canadian, Michael Vandenham. I think he'd be the first to admit, because he has admitted on social media that his results haven't been where he's wanted. But, you know, top five, finished fifth. So that's good to see, you know, that our second favorite Canadian is probably at least one result that he's certainly going to be happy with as he, you know, turns his eye towards... I can tell you his eyes are turned towards, you know, Canadian Nats and Pan Ams, that 2-week block and a month from now.
Yeah,
really, really doing the Lars Vanderhaar and breaking up those American flags with a maple leaf in the results.
Yeah, the only one. Look at that.
I know, right? So, yeah, they couldn't get C1 status with this race lineup.
Well, no. One, two. Well, they could. They're right there. Well, Eric, should we do the numbers?
Oh, I forget. It's the combination of men and women. That's right.
Okay. Yeah, so 1, 2, 3, 4. No, they only have 4 nationalities.
Mm. Abby Yates is originally from Great Britain. And
oh, I see her down there. You're right.
Oh, man. Abby Yates might be the new ringer. She is.
So, but here's the question, though. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They only have 7.
There's not 10. Oh, we didn't get enough of the Canadians.
Yeah.
The women did their part, but the men.
They certainly did, because it's 6 on one side and then Vandenham.
Yeah.
Do the juniors count now that it's a UCI category?
Oh.
Don't know. Is there anybody in there?
No. But I just, you know, another place for some, you know, Czech who wants to actually raise their children in the States, but, you know, get invited to all the C1s.
Well, I think that, you know, Maria Larkin's out there. Get Maria out to more races.
Yeah.
I know there are a couple more. There are a couple more folks out there. But I don't think they're that concerned about it since we got world championships.
Yeah. Well, we've done a pretty good job of sticking to the agenda. So I guess the last thing to cover for this is I thought this was a great episode of the CX Heat Check. I mean, I don't think it could play out better where you have, like, it literally came down to it could have been either way for the top two. For both the men and the women. I thought it worked perfectly, and I thought you hyped it. It was 10 out of 10. Would recommend watching the CX Heat Check for this week. I mean, unless you're a fan of the riders who ended up second.
I did like there was one person who was upset with how the European men were handled, but, you know, if they're not, you know, Ailes could have shown up and raced this weekend. There was nothing stopping him.
Yeah. That's true.
He could have been there.
And World Cup wins. Yeah, you know, he could have. He pulled an 11.
But no, thank you, Zach. I appreciate it. It was fun to do. It continues to be fun to do. If you haven't seen it, go to youtube.com/CXHairs. Go check out the heat check.
No, I just say it was great to see on Monday morning, as you pointed out, Bill, that Curtis White was tweeting about the heat check, our new North American series.
Well, I was thinking one way that, you know, potentially that could be kind of interesting is obviously you're using it as a gauge of, no pun intended, of where we're at in terms of performance. But one way that, you know, with I think Pan Ams, it could be kind of interesting if it took more of a favorites going into it kind of thing. I mean, I don't know if, you know, right, like whoever's on top will be the favorite or something, but if it becomes more predictive versus like retrospective.
Well, what's going to be really interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how the algorithm handles it. This is our first split weekend.
Ooh,
coming up.
Oh,
that's right.
So, you know, it's really going to be a comparison, and I think I'm going to have to program in some other criteria here because it, you know, what happens when everyone isn't racing head to head? You know, you have a one field on one coast in Charm City, and then another one in the mountains in Boulder, and it's gonna be really interesting to see how this one pans out. All right, well, we are actually already over an hour. Do we just want to table any Euro talk? Is there any stuff that we want to think need to discuss in the rest of our agenda here before we sign off?
I don't think we need to go into details. I do want to note that Celine Carmen Alvarado won both days, Saturday and Sunday, in the elite women. Great kick to her season. Really good to see her start that strong. Sana Kant looks like October Sana Kant.
Right.
You know, plenty of time till February. Trying to think of any other notes. Eli Easerby took a heck of a digger on a barrier and did this amazing thing where he grabbed his bike that was upside down behind him and, like, in one swift move, pulled it right side up and hopped back on it and then finished second in the race. So he's still strong.
Yeah, we could spend, I think, another hour just talking about the Belgian or European men's field right now. It's but I want to keep it positive, and I don't think that would be a positive discussion. But one down the road, we're gonna have to have a whole discussion about super teams.
Yeah, no, let's do it. I mean, speaking of super, we've got super prestige races coming up the next 2 weekends. So maybe after Boom, that might be a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, that's also the same weekend as DCCX. And there's stuff going on. There's too much going on. And then
we may have to get another show in here.
But yeah, definitely. I think once we get some results from the super prestige, because I don't know, these seem like almost like preseason games to me. I mean, right? Super prestige.
They're a little bit, because they're not really part of any series. I kind of got confused and wrote Brico Cross, but it's not. It's Atheist. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's not any of the big series. I do want to point out that Annemiek van Vleuten is talking about racing at Degum, I believe. That's super prestige, right?
Geeten, whatever is this weekend. Degum's the night race before Christmas, okay, or before New Year's.
Anyway, pretty cool to see her come race a little cross. I know that the rainbow bands don't cross across discipline across. That was pun intended. But I mean, it would be kind of fun if there was some sort of way we could work in cross discipline world championship apparel. I don't know. I like the rainbow bands.
Yeah.
One other thing I thought was interesting was that Betsema is still ranked number one in the UCI rankings. However, the UCI has now released their new highlighter system on the rankings, where they have highlighted her name in a certain color, and they have footnotes to she's provisionally suspended. This is a new thing, I think, that came after all the outcry that she was still on the rankings.
I'm going to say the English-speaking outcry.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And speaking of English speakers, Helen Wyman asked to remove herself from the ranking. So, you know, she wanted to remove herself to also like give that fifth. She was ranked 50th, and she wanted to give that 50th spot to a different racer. So, you know, you can take yourself off the rankings. It's not like that Betsema has to be there.
Yeah, she's not. I mean, they're going to have to drag her off, I think. You know, but what I love about, you know, what Helen did, and this is, you know, dopers aside, who shouldn't be on there, and of course we should just come to expect it, but what a classy move. And it's the weird thing that how the UCI rankings work, and that, you know, I can remember when Niels retired and then Sven retired, and it was like 16 months. They were still in the top 50. So both those guys were like taking slots. I don't think the rule was in effect then. It wasn't this top 50 you automatically go. So it wasn't like that. But at the same time, it's just so the long tail on this. You know, I joke about how that's not the heat check. Like, we don't have long tails on the heat check. It's like, you know, you're out of there quick if you're not performing. But you can be done racing and still like be ranked 2 years later. I never understood how that works. So that Helen is retired, was still retired and in the top 50 because those points haven't reset yet, and giving someone who's in 51st the opportunity to automatically qualify for World Cup races is just, it's just awesome. I mean, it's as I said, it shouldn't be a surprise, but thanks for bringing that up, because that was huge.
Up next, you know, we have Charm City near you, Bill, and we've got the U.S. Open in Boulder. Sorry, hang on. It's not the U.S. Open. It's the Shimano / Floyds of Leadville U.S. Open presented by Trek Boulder Panaracer. Really trying to get the sponsors their money's worth, I guess.
As long as I got rid of Cyclocross, that's all that matters.
I did notice that the website, I went and looked specifically, it's no longer there. It's no longer hyphen.
Well, it's not even the hyphen. It used to be CYCLE hyphen CROSS. It truly was. I was like not joking about it. It truly was Cyclocross.
That.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I call it when I'm being goofy.
It's going to be interesting for the split weekend, and the one name we'll be missing is I saw Katie Keogh is heading over to Europe to begin her campaign there, so we won't have her stateside, and she won't be threatening your heat check, Bill.
yeah, she's out of there. And then I think Katie Compton races in Boulder, and then she's out of here.
Yeah, so I guess one thing of interest, and I've been meaning to get in touch with Katie Keough, because as a journalist, I guess that's a thing I can do. But she is racing the Super Prestige on Sunday, which suggests that perhaps she has start contracts for the Super Prestige series, which is a little bit different than what Katie Compton does, because her first race is, I mean, her first, she's doing the DVV, and so her first race under that series is November 1st with Copenberg. And so just kind of interesting, you know, the choices where she chose that one. It looks like Katie Keough might have be on a little bit of a different plan, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what contracts she gets. And I should probably get in touch with her and do some journalism to figure out,
because
it would be really interesting too if she does both series. I think that would be great for her in terms of, like, you know, now too there's with GCN live streaming these races, Trek Bikes, I'm assuming, is still doing DVV, Flow Bikes, the subscription service. There's really good kind of exposure for them being on TV, you know, especially if they can race at the front. So sweet. Michael, where can we find you?
Y'all can find me at Yeah You Ride on Instagram. And if you want to tweet at me, find me at Land Softly.
And Bill.
Zach, you could find me at CX Hairs on most social media platforms, including TikTok, which I haven't done anything on, but I felt like the kids needed a, everybody needs to have an account everywhere. So it's there too.
Looking forward to that.
No dance videos in will be upcoming. If you want to yell at us for anything we said or have any feedback of any kind, you can email us at feedback@cxhairs.com. And if you haven't checked out the CX Heat Check videos on YouTube, please go do that. I think they're fun and you may like them. Zach, how about you? What you got up?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at the Shoe Star. You can also read all of the newsy stuff at cxmagazine.com, which is the little website that I run. So you may have heard of it if you're a cyclist. I do have to say, to close this out, and maybe this is giving a shout out to someone who will listen to this, but I was standing at the start line in the start grid at the Chicago Cross Cup on Sunday, Cat 3 race, and I was just shooting the shit with Jason, this dude that I know from Wisconsin. And this guy taps me on the shoulder. He's like, "Are you Zach?" And I was like, "How did you know?" He's like, "I recognize your voice from the podcast." I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" I'm like, "There's no way." He's like, "Oh, I listen to them. They're great." And then Daniel McMahon, the cycling reporter, I was like, I was bullshitting with someone taking pictures. He's like, "Are you Zach? I recognize your voice from the podcast." So I was like, "Holy shit, is this a thing that happens now?"
Yeah, it is.
It's, it's pretty awesome.
All right, guys, this was awesome.
Cool.
Thanks for doing it. We will let's do it again next week.
Sounds good.
All right, sounds good.
See you guys.
Good night.
Bye.